Everybody, this is Pam coming to you from the blog Make Room for the Stuttering. Please check it out at www.stutterrockstar.wordpress.com. And as you may be aware, I have recently, excitedly, launched a new podcast called Women Who Stutter, Our Stories. And one of the things that I really want to be able to do with this is to just have chats with ordinary people, ordinary women who happen to stutter and who are, you know, leading fantastic, successful, exciting lives, and stuttering happens to be part of it. And that's really what I'm hoping that this podcast is going to accomplish. So I'm asking lots of different women to join me, and I'm really excited to have a good friend with me today. We're going to hear her story, so please welcome Lori Milnitsky to the show. And Lori, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself. And hi, by the way.
Hi, Pam. I would be happy to. I have been a speech pathologist for the past 18 years. I am a person who stutters also. I actually run my own private practice on Long Island called All Island Speech and Stuttering Therapy, where I specialize in working with children and adults who stutter. What else can I tell you? I'm married, and I have two daughters, ages 16 and 12.
Ooh, I bet they're a handful at times.
Actually, yeah, they're a handful, but I love them, and they actually believe in, I mean, they're actually very, very encouraging. So I work a lot, and sometimes it's very hard because I feel like I'm not really available as much, but they really actually help me out a lot. So
cool.
I've been lucky.
Yeah. It sounds like it. So what made you decide to become an SLP?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll try not to make it that long. I actually, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I stuttered very severely. I could really barely get a word out when I was younger. I couldn't say my name. I didn't raise my hand for like 18 years in school and in college. And I actually graduated with a degree in accounting. And I was an accountant for 5 years. And I really was not happy. I felt like I had picked a field that I thought didn't require that much communicating, which actually I think I was wrong, because I think, of course, speech pathology requires more, but I think most fields you have to communicate on some level. And I was working about 5 years, and I actually have a good friend also who is a speech pathologist who stutters, and we went through a lot of intensive fluency shaping courses together, and I just really decided that, you know, it really wasn't what I wanted. So I went back to school for my master's. It was hard, to be honest, because my speech was very severe, and although the school that I graduated from, Hofstra, was very, very encouraging, I did get some negative feedback, but I really felt that
because of your speech.
Yeah, I mean, the first school that I had gone to, because I had to take some undergraduate prerequisites, felt that I would never be able to communicate with parents, but I battled back because I just really felt like I wasn't leading my life how I wanted to. And I felt that I really wanted to help others. And I wanted people who stutter to be given the opportunity to really live their lives and communicate without having anything hold them back. So that's how I kind of got into all of this. And I'm really happy. Really happy. It was the best decision that I've ever made.
Wow. Well, yeah, you sound really happy. You sound very passionate about the work that you do. We've talked before, both, on Facebook and whatnot, and through the blogs, which, by the way, Lori has a cool blog on her website as well, so we'll make sure she plugs that later. But I guess you sound very fluent, actually. Now, when you say that you were a severe stutterer and you couldn't say your name, I mean, what do you mean exactly? What is severe to you?
It was severe. I mean, there were times when I stuttered on every single word, where I blocked,
Okay.
where, I mean, I would get bad headaches because I was just pushing words out of my mouth. I was blocking in my larynx. I would have to like move my head to get words out. My breath support, I just didn't have any breath support. I was always out of breath. I would pick up the phone. I couldn't say hello. I mean, sometimes I would repeat parts of words, but I think a lot of times I was prolonging sounds, which is still probably the hardest thing for me when I'm not on. I tend to prolong sounds. I do, it's very interesting because if you would have spoken to me probably 5 years ago, I'm not sure, even though I had the fluency tools that I have, I'm not sure I would have been using them. And a lot of it, I mean, and I've read about this on your blog and other people who stutter. I had a tremendous fear of sounding different, and I felt like I sounded very monotone. And I don't think I really had the confidence to use them. And I think also, like being a, someone who stuttered, who was very severe, not just the actual physical components, I just had fears like you can't imagine. I mean, actually, I'm sure you can imagine, terrible fears of just picking up a phone. Like I didn't, I mean, I used to think like, how could I ever get married and have kids? Like, what if there's an emergency? How would I be able to call 911? If they had to go to the doctor, how would I possibly manage that? Just terrible fears of even being in a conversation and saying what I wanted, because I was just so afraid. Actually, I wasn't used to interestingly, I wasn't used to having people look at me because I was always hiding. And so when I did take all these, fluency shaping courses, it really never addressed the psychological issues.
So
But
when
it,
I'm
I'm
sorry,
sorry.
when you say fluency shaping, I mean, is that what you attribute to what helped you sound as smooth and as comfortable as you do now? Or
That was like, I would say that was the first step. That was the first step. And that's what I try and tell people I work with, which is hard because I think when we read, and maybe you can share your experiences with this, but when we read about intensive fluency shaping, you sort of get the impression, or I got the impression, that you go and you take a 3 week course and you're very fluent. And that's kind of how it is. So I do attribute my tools to that, but I don't attribute my what I call recovering from stuttering to that. I did a lot of work with readings, a lot of self-help, a lot of positive self-talk. I realized I was beating myself up a lot. I mean, I would be like fluent 90% of the time, and that like 10% that I wasn't, I would just beat myself up. But I mean, I am curious from your standpoint, because like what do you feel about fluency shaping tools?
Well,
I know.
I don't really have that much experience with with it, to be honest with you. As you may know, I was largely covert for most of my life. For some of the same reasons that you shared, I was just always afraid of being exposed as a person who stuttered. I had gotten early negative messages when I started stuttering from my dad and from a teacher. They yelled at me to stop talking like that, and if I couldn't say it right, don't say it at all. Those kinds of things. And that's pretty much what propelled me to be covert. In my mind, I thought the only way that I wasn't going to get negative feedback like that was to not stutter. And the only way that I knew as a child to not stutter was to not talk. So I really didn't have any therapy of any type until four years ago. And I got involved with a program locally through a college here that primarily focused on fluency shaping. And to be honest, I don't think I ever really took to it, because as I began to come out of I guess the best way to put it would be like the covert closet, as I came out of there and suddenly, you know, just allowed myself to stutter publicly and realized that it was okay to do that, as I learned about fluency shaping, to me it kind of sounded like if I learned some techniques to be fluent all the time, then I was just basically going back to hiding the stuttering again.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of like why I was maybe resistant to it. And I did fluency shaping practice, or you know, whatever the right way to call that is, with master level students that were going through a communication disorders program, and they were like getting their practicum hours. So I would see a different student clinician every semester, and it was kind of like starting over every time. So I never really got the hang of, you know, you call them tools, other people have called them targets. I've heard them call techniques. I never really got the hang of it. So I don't know if I can say that I have an opinion either yay or nay, but I don't really think it helped me.
From what I've seen and from my own experience, I'm not sure. I mean, I do have one adult who sees me once a week,
mm-hmm.
who's done really well. But he does practice an immense amount. But other than that, I just don't recommend therapy for adults or even teens. Just, I don't know, how many times were you going each week?
Yes, for 45 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think, I'm going to go out on a limb and almost say that it's virtually impossible, because you're almost reteaching yourself
mm-hmm.
how to talk. And there's just no way that you can reteach yourself how to talk in 45 minutes. It's just, you know, and chances are you're going to walk out of the therapy room and there's something you're not going to be doing right. And you won't know, because everything in speech is so precise. You know, you have to retrain yourself how to breathe. I mean, there are so many times when I think I'm doing things right, and when I break it down, I realize I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find when I do, like, I'll do some intensives, I'll do weekends, and I find that if, like, adults have other people that they can work with, other people who stutter, it really seems to work out well.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, because, you know, everyone has their own, everyone's looking for something different.
Right.
You know, obviously my perspective is more fluency.
Right.
But it's certainly not the end all. And I certainly, you know, believe that communication matters more than anything else. And it's very important, obviously, to not be ashamed about it. Because I think, like you were saying, it's very hard to try and hide something that you're so embarrassed about.
Yeah.
Because then, yeah, you do kind of feel worse. Yeah, I think also when I became very open about it, you know, when I just started, actually when I started to specialize in working with people who stutter, which was more about 5 years ago, that was when I became like very open about it. I mean, the fact that I can actually write all my feelings down in a blog and let everybody read it was something that I found at first very hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, I find it, you know, that's something that's really helped me a lot.
Well, I want to go back to something that you just said a couple minutes ago that immediately got a reaction in my head.
Okay.
You said something like 45 minutes of therapy is probably not enough because when you walk out of the room, you're probably not doing something right. I think that may have been part of the problem why I didn't take well to the therapy that I was being exposed to, because I felt like, okay, if I'm not doing something right, then I must be failing. And I just kind of don't like the idea of feeling like I'm failing at anything, because I don't know if I'm saying it right, but it just seems to me like if you're putting the expectation on somebody that they have to learn a technique or practice a lot and, you know, to get it right, what if they don't? Does that mean that they failed?
No, I felt like a failure, and I think, I hope I'm very careful when I work with people. There is no one who fails. There's no one who fails. I mean, if you just put the effort into it and if you have an assignment that you have to go home and practice and be like 100% fluent, it's setting you up for a failure. If you kind of just take one day at a time, you know, and do the best you can and have a well thought out plan, I don't think you can fail, and I think a lot of what you're saying is exactly how I felt, that a lot of the expectations come from the pressure that we're putting on ourselves, that, you know, we have to perform, we have to, you know, speak a certain way, we have to sound a certain way, and if we don't, and it's like almost like being back in school, like we didn't finish our homework, so... You know, we're going to walk in and get yelled at. But really, in the long run, it really doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. It matters how we feel inside. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I think is so important, to just, you know, try and have conversations with yourself. You know, I am doing the best I can. You know, I did the best I can. I did, you know, speak to a certain amount of people. I did do it with correct breathing. Or, you know, on the other extreme, yeah, I stuttered a lot, but I still established really good eye contact. And I got my message across, and I didn't substitute.
So you're kind of okay with both of those extremes then?
I am okay. I mean, definitely, yeah. I mean, I respect, you know, anybody. I'm definitely more fluency oriented, and I don't want to say that I'm not, because I definitely am, but I definitely don't put anybody down if they say that, you know, they just want to be pretty open about it. Then I'm fine with that also. If that's making them happy, if that's improving their communication, if that's improving their self-esteem, then I'll work with them on it.
So most of the clients that you see, or that come to you looking for help, are they looking to become as fluent as they can be, or are they looking to just improve how they feel about themselves? Or maybe.
Well, there are definitely, you know, a lot of them, honestly, a lot, well, the preschool is obviously a whole different story, but the school age, the teens, and the adults usually know that I stutter also. They are trying to be, I would say, as fluent as they can be, but by the same token, they're also, and I'm trying to help them just get their confidence up, because I don't want fluency at all costs. I don't want fluency and then have people still avoiding situations, you know. And I don't believe that if you're fluent with me for 45 minutes, as you know, and that's like almost meaningless to me. So, you know, I do recommend a lot of readings that I found that really have helped a lot.
What do you mean by readings? Like, you know, like motivational stuff, or what is that you're referring to?
Yeah, I just actually posted something on my blog, on my website, and there's a book that I really highly recommend. It's called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Oh, it's great, by Dr. Susan Jeffers. It's great.
Yeah. I think it's a great book. That's a book that really helped me when I was trying to get over my fear of public speaking. That helped. I also love The Road Less Traveled. Have you read that also?
No, I know there was a poem by Robert Frost many years ago, but I don't think I've read the book.
Yeah, I've read a lot of books over, I don't know, 18 years, 19 years. But you know, the first, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, I'm not sure if those words really got in. I'm not sure until I just finally, you know, I got so tired of beating myself up. I really did. I mean, you know, I turned 47 a few weeks ago. I mean, how many years can you just beat yourself up?
Exactly.
And, you know, I see too many, you know, adults and so many people, you know, write to me that they've had therapy that hasn't worked. And that just really breaks my heart, you know, because I think that the expectations were high. And they do. They feel like failures. So, you know, I really hope it, with the younger ones, you know, that we can get the correct message across so they don't go through all of this.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned the word earlier, you mentioned the word self-talk. And actually I've had that on my mind quite a bit, because as much as I kind of pride myself on lately about being fairly open and being honest with, you know, how I feel about lots of things, and in particular my stuttering journey, there's still times, and I'm sure everybody that stutters goes through this, there's still times where I find myself telling myself, oh my God, you sounded awful right there, or, you know, like, there's somebody important listening to you, like, imagine what they must think of you. And I find myself having these, like, you know, little negative dialogues with myself. And, you know, having been a counselor for 25 years, I certainly know better, and I know that I should try to reframe that, but I seem to have a really hard time, you know, turning that off sometimes. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, it really happens a lot. I mean, even to this day, you know, it still blows my mind, because I think it's so self-defeating, and I could totally understand, because I do it all the time. I mean, just to give you an example, I'm thinking about this. I had a parent call me a few months ago, and they had asked me about therapy for their son who was 9, and I had had a pretty hard speech day that day. And, you know, I went over the therapy, and she said she would get back with me, and I never heard from her for a while. And I must have spent about a week and a half beating myself up because I was so upset. Anyway, I finally heard from her, and she had just gotten busy with other things. But it really bothered me that in that week and a half, I mean, it's mentally exhausting to beat yourself up.
So wait. You thought that the reason she didn't get back to you was because she heard you stutter and thought you wouldn't be any good for her child?
Right. But really, probably if I would have listened to myself, I probably didn't stutter that much, you know, but in my mind I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so self-defeating because many people come to me because of the fact that I stutter. So it wasn't such an unusual thing. She knew. But it just really bothered me. Like you said, I mean, I just, you know, I could really be hard on myself. Mm-hmm. About a lot of things. I think, honestly, I'm hard on myself about a lot.
I wonder if that's a woman's thing? I mean, I've heard women tend to be harder on themselves because we place more expectations on ourselves. I mean, do you think that's true, or is that just true of everybody, whether you're male or female, or whether you stutter or not?
I mean, I guess, you know, being a woman, I can only speak for myself. I mean, I'm certainly much harder on myself than my husband is on himself, but I think, honestly, he's a positive person.
Okay.
And, you know, I have to work on not seeing the negative. You know, I have to really, like, remember that you have to be optimistic.
Right.
And positive. But, you know, I just, like, totally lost what I was saying. I'm sorry. I know. So you were saying about women. I mean, I think, and I'm going to say this, I think women, yeah, have a lot on their plate. I think they do have harder expectations or higher, and we also have all these hormonal issues, you know.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But you know what? My father started also, and not anymore. And I can't tell you why not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I could just tell you he slowly stopped. But he's a very positive person, and he always has been. So, you know, he's not hard on himself at all.
So it sounds like, based on what you're saying now and what you said earlier, that, you know, you believe that having a positive attitude plays a huge role in a person's ability to attain the level of fluency that they want, and how effective they are as communicators. Is that kind of what I'm hearing? That attitude has a lot.
I think attitude's a big thing. I think attitude, I mean, I think you need a combination of things, but you definitely need a positive attitude. You definitely need to start accepting yourself for who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly believe that some of it comes from getting older. I don't consider myself old, but, you know, older and going through a lot in life.
Yeah.
You know, you finally just say, I am who I am. I mean, I don't know, is that how, do you feel that, like, when you started writing your blog, that you just kind of wanted to get all these feelings out?
Absolutely. It was like, for so many years, I had kept quiet and not said what I wanted to say. And then all of a sudden, when I just had reached that, you know, that point that I was just unwilling to do that anymore, or dance that dance anymore, I did. I needed a way to let it out. And it was safer, I will admit, it was safer for me for a long time to write. And I enjoy writing, and I always felt I was a good writer because I stutter, because I overcompensate it. But now I think I'm finally reaching the point where I'm kind of putting them both together, and I'm developing the confidence and the courage to, you know, express myself verbally as well. But yeah, I started writing because I felt it was a way to get some of this stuff out there and, you know, put out there what sometimes we're afraid to talk about. You know?
Yeah. No, I think it, you know, I mean, it might be a safe way, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I think, I mean, not everybody can run out and just express how they feel, and I think actually writing is very helpful, and I think you've helped a lot of people. I know I've certainly learned a lot from reading your blog. I always say whatever works.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely writing about how I feel and writing about emotions. It almost helps me process things. Like when I put something down in writing, it's no longer just a fleeting thought. Like it becomes real because I've put it somewhere. I've parked it somewhere. And now that it's out there, and especially because I make it public and I let other people see what I think, it just allows me, I think, to just kind of explore that and not hold on so tight to it and anymore, which is what I used to do for so long. You know, keep the emotions bottled up and keep everything stuffed. And obviously that's not healthy for anybody, but especially somebody trying to not be covert anymore.
Right. It's very hard. I mean, I was actually nominated for an award back in September. It's called a Fortune 52 award, and I was actually nominated by someone from the National Stuttering Association, and they honor women in business. And it was a big award ceremony, you know, and they wrote in an article about me and, you know, how I went through all this, you know, all these issues with my stuttering and how I started to overcome all of it. And I invited all my friends and family. And I really have to say, it was the first time I, like, had somebody announce all of this. And it was a wonderful honor. It was a wonderful honor, but I sort of sat there in shock because I wasn't used to having all these people know, I mean, they all know that I stutter, but I wasn't used to them hearing the way I really felt. So that definitely got me out more.
Congratulations, number
Thank
one.
You.
And number two, you know, as you were saying that, it made me think, it's funny how we can be, I was always so ashamed and afraid of letting my true self out. I didn't want to be exposed. You know, I was afraid of rejection. And now you just mentioned, you know, you had some positive stuff going on and you were, you know, you had some accolades and you got an honor. You know, it's funny because I find right now I have people telling me things like, oh, you're doing such a good job, and, you know, you're so inspirational. And I have just as hard a time letting that in sometimes as I did letting go of some of the negative stuff. It's just funny to me that, you know, I don't really want to accept praise any more than I want it to be stuck in my covert closet. So it's kind of hard to find a balance, I guess.
It is hard. I have a hard time accepting praise. I think I can accept it now. I find sometimes I just have to say thank you. And, you know, not say anything else. Because I used to say, oh, thank you, but, you know, and then I used to, like, almost make an excuse for not wanting to really hear it.
Yeah.
But I think it's just hard because I think that when we hear it, we like almost have to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Within ourselves.
You know, and that's funny because I had somebody say something along those lines to me today. The same thing, you know, just You know, Pam, when somebody tells you that you've done a good thing or a nice thing or that you're a good person, just let it in and say thank you. And I think it goes back a little bit to the self-talk. Like, I immediately want to say, oh, I don't deserve that, or you're just saying it, you know, and sometimes I even, like, roll my eyes.
Right.
You know, so again, I think, it, you know, the self-talk, you're right. I mean, you just raised a great point. You know, just sometimes we just need to say thank you and just feel that for a minute and just, you know, let the good feelings wash over us just like we used to let the bad feelings wash over us.
Right.
So thank you, Lori, for chatting with me tonight. You've definitely, you know, I appreciate hearing your points of view, and it's interesting to hear from an SLP who stutters too. I think that's just a, you know, I've always wondered why people who stutter choose to get into the profession. So it certainly makes sense. Now, we mentioned briefly that you have a website and you also write a blog. Do you want to go ahead and put a shameless plug out there?
Sure. I would love to. My blog actually is on my website, and it can be accessed through www.allislandspeech.com. And I would be so happy if some people write comments on it. Sometimes I'm not sure, except for Pam, I'm not sure how many people are actually reading it. And I want to say also that I'm really glad that you started this for women, because I think it's really needed. And I think there are times when women feel very uncomfortable, especially women who stutter, and you walk into a support group and you're the only women there with a whole bunch of men. So I think it's a really good feeling to have other women who are going through the same thing.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that up, because that's one of the reasons why I thought this was important. You know, I've been there. I've gone to support meetings and have felt like, you know, I'm the only woman there, and how can they possibly understand? So thank you, and thank you for all the people, I hope, that are listening and getting something out of this. Women who stutter, we have stories to tell. Thanks.